I'm going to take up the story from the point, more or less, when Kathleen left off. You may remember it's about 1997, and we're in the throes of amalgamation. And what Kathleen described is very accurate. It was a very chaotic period. Clearly, in the cultural community, you know, what was the structure going to be? Who was the structure going to be? Where were you going to be taking your grant applications, etc.? But all, I mean, for the community at large, for those who were around at that time and looking at some faces, some people weren't maybe quite old enough to remember. But for those who were around at the time, it was a hugely disruptive time for the entire city. There was no one in the various municipalities that made up the former metro who wanted, well, there were the majority of people did not want amalgamation. There were thousands of people marched in the streets against it. There were rallies, there were editorials, there were meetings, but the inexorable force of the provincial government's decree went forward, and it was so decreed. Despite a referendum of some 80%+ people voting against it, but the referendum was not binding. The various municipalities put it on. And if I may be permitted a little side story here about the wonderful Bill Kilbourne, who died about a year before. His widow, Betsy Kilbourne, told me that she was a little concerned, but she knew Bill would have wanted her to do this. These referendum ballots were mailed to people's homes. And a ballot came for Betsy and a ballot came for Bill. And she said, I know Bill would have wanted me to put his ballot in against amalgamation. Nonetheless, the inevitable happened. And at that point, a lot of us who were working, the Toronto Arts Council, Metro Cultural Affairs, the North York Cultural Office, and the various entities around the city, banded together, because the one thing we knew we wanted to have happen was to preserve the significant work that had been done and the structures and the platform that had been built that was allowing the arts to be funded and to have a voice. And we worked with each other and with the transition team. Kathleen said that in a way the plans don't matter, but I think, yes, stuff happens, and yes, it really depends on who's there and the personalities and how you can forge alliances. But we had some good plans, and the transition team listened to them. And we were, if not front and center, we at least were very much part of the transition team's recommendations around having a significant cultural presence in the newly amalgamated city. It was at the time a little bit like a mudslide, and everybody was trying to keep their footing in this mudslide, and it's impossible really to convey the sense of chaos and disruption that we were trying to operate coherently within. At the same time, as I said, there was really no one in the city, substantially no one, who wanted amalgamation. So everyone was angry at the newly amalgamated city. The city was us, but still, and within that, culture and heritage are about primarily about meaning and identity. And of course, people were scared of losing their meaning and identity in this newly amalgamated city. So I found that a great deal of the anger was kind of focused right at the newly created culture division, which we all wanted. So that was part of the context in which we began to plan for the culture plan for the creative city. In 1999, it was 2 years really after amalgamation, I came to work for the city as the executive director of the culture division. I inherited a structure that had already been ordained, and it included museums, heritage preservation, public art, city-built public art. The developer public art remained appropriately with planning with Jane Perdue, and community arts, art services we call it, cultural policy development, loosely speaking, was part of the mandate. And City Council had asked that the new culture division create a culture plan for the next 10 years. When I arrived, the chaos of amalgamation was perhaps a little bit subsided. But frankly, that first year, I had there were a lot of staff in this new structure, but they had been very much reduced from what was there before. What they did was they took the various components of what had been in the arts or cultural bureaucracies of the former city. Toronto Arts Council was left as the arm's-length funding agency, primarily. So the North York component, anybody working in Scarborough in the Parks and Rec Department identified with culture went into this mix. Then they reduced a lot of people because the whole exercise of amalgamation was downsizing. So even though it looked like a lot at about 150 FTEs, that was spread over 10 museums, several cultural centers in the outlying municipalities, Scarborough, Etobicoke, and in fact it was a diminished force from what had been there before. Nonetheless, it was a critical mass. And for the first time in the history of Toronto and the former municipalities, there was, I saw that that was the great strength. There was a critical mass of cultural people, cultural activities brought together. And it was sort of the image in my head was that the whole was going to be greater than its parts, because when you look down at into the parts, each of them was a little bit weaker than they should have been. So we started the work of developing this culture plan very early on after I came in. At that time, even though the structure was there, I had no staff. I had to go through a staffing process, which took a year, to put in the lead staff. But as soon as I had them, I said, okay, we're going to do this culture plan. And everybody was scrambling. They were also, at the same time, like the Metro experience, there were new plans being developed for this new city, a new official plan, a new strategic plan, a new plan for social services. And out of all that, you know, the official plan is a very good document, and there's some good cultural pieces in it. And there was a culture plan. Has anybody heard of the city's strategic plan? And in a sense, not surprisingly, because people were cobbling these together on the fly while they were cowering under their desks because, you know, people were being exited, programs were being shifted or eradicated, and the corporate memory was severely, severely impacted. So I said, okay, we're going to do this plan. And I got my new managers together and the team, and I said, we're doing it without a consultant, again, like Kathleen, and as we did with the cultural capital report. I saw it as an opportunity to really connect with the community ourselves, which we desperately needed to do. Remember, the community was really angry at us, even though we hadn't done anything except survive and kind of make this happen collectively, and it was also an opportunity for us to build our team and a vision of what this new culture division was going to be for the city. So we started working on providing coherence where really there was none at the time. There had been a legacy of coherence, but it had been severely impacted. And through the work, Tom's work at the TAC, one of the points of cultural capital was it built an economic and an employment model for what the arts do in a city. And I know that's not always comfortable for artists. I mean, there's no question that the art and the value of that to society is what comes first. But when you're trying to argue to politicians who are busy busily concerned with tax increases and necessary expenditures for police and transit, which take up, speaking of percentages of the budget, I think something like, you know, it's close to 100% of the city's budget. It's a huge percentage. Then you have to have compelling arguments. So from the beginning, I thought that we needed to find a new paradigm. David Silcock spoke about the need to refresh, and I know that in the arts, if you don't grow, you're dying. And I think of cultural support mechanisms like metro cultural affairs like the TAC and like our new culture section, as they have to be part of the arts in that way, and they have to reflect that. So that we have to find a new paradigm. And now the concept of the creative city is very current, so much so that Richard Florida, one of its chief proponents, lives with us here in Toronto. But at that time, I stumbled on it as we were doing research. Originally, the term was coined in Great Britain, in the UK. People like Charles Landry with his company Comedia. And I was very intrigued with this idea that all elements of a city can contribute to its creativity. And it was a great paradigm, not only, I thought, for the newly amalgamated city, but for the kinds of things we wanted in this city. Okay, so we have 150 different ethnicities. How is that reflected in a creative cultural plan? We have in this new section of cultural services, we had heritage preservation, we had museums, we had the arts, we had community arts, and how do you reflect that? And I love that vision that it was a creative whole. And so we adopted that for Toronto. And it was actually after we came across the concept of the creative city that I think we stumbled on Richard Florida's work. It was just on the cusp of being very very public, and his three T's seem to fit Toronto perfectly. Tolerance, which is a word we don't always like, but the meaning he had behind it, I thought worked for Toronto. And talent was another, which was obviously perfect for Toronto. So we began the work. We struck a steering committee. It was comprised of artists and technology. Yes, technology. So the cultural industries and, Toronto's strength in biomedical and biotechnology, so those kinds of things, which are also creative spheres of activity. We struck a steering committee. We started our public consultations. Everybody who's spoken about cultural planning so far has talked about the importance of the consultations. I wish Kathleen suggested that it's easier these days with internet and computers, and we did certainly reach out that way, but I don't think there is any substitute for sitting down in a room with people face to face and hearing from them. So we did a lot of that, and we came through that and presented this document, which we called a work print for the creative city. One of the things I didn't mention was our secret weapon. I said we're going to do this with staff without consultants. And I think we did not even really engage very many research consultants, Terry. Am I right? We may have had one or two here and there. I know, Lillian, you did some work for us, but it was some economic impact that we needed. That's right. But I also knew that for the argument to be persuasive, the document had to tell a very compelling story. And so at the TAC, we'd worked with Elaine Dewar a few times, who's a wonderful writer, and she agreed to work with us. And she sat in on a lot of meetings, Elaine did, and took notes in her big gloopy scrawl, which she somehow was able to read later. And so she was quite instrumental, I think, because she, if you read the culture plan, I think you'll agree that it's a beautifully written document. And she wrote the work print. And she was very keen. Elaine is an artist herself in various ways, a writer, but a visual artist as well. She was very keen to maintain the image of the artist. So the work print was meant to be a symbolic of film, with the work prints for film. So it's not just a discussion document, in other words. And we took what's in here. We pretty much laid out what we had heard and where we thought we wanted to go with this new amalgamated cities cultural and arts plan. And we started to develop the actual plan itself. Altogether, we worked for about 2 years. Partly it took us that long because we were doing it ourselves and trying to start doing the work that we needed to do at the same time. But it was very important for us that we listened and we heard and we reflected things properly. So we went through a couple of iterations of the draft. We sent things out to people. We asked for comments. And one comment we got back just close to the end when we went on an almost final draft that we were sending out, somebody said, are you guys like not paying attention? There's this thing that's going to happen in 2006 where the major cultural renaissance projects are going to come on stream, and this is a great opportunity to find a way to reflect all of the amazing artistic assets of Toronto. So we said, yeah, that's a good point. And we recommended that in 2006, we have a celebration of the creative city. That turned into the Live with Culture campaign, was also a number of the recommendations of the report, where the smaller organizations needed more marketing, where they needed more profile. And so we used the occasion of the major Renaissance projects to shine a spotlight on all the arts in Toronto. We took the report in 2003 to City Council. And I'm trying to remember if it, I don't think it was unanimously approved. Against. Two against, yeah. Guess who? Sorry, Jerry, it's always them. But even Councillor Denzel Minim Wong, who was then the chair of the Economic Development Committee, spoke against it and grilled me like I was on the witness stand as a defendant in a heinous, abuse case against children or something, grilled me. He voted for it. That culture plan was, of course, done through the time of the regime of Mel Lastman. And while Mel had a lot of enthusiasms and had the mayor's ball for the arts, I wouldn't say that it was entirely a culture-friendly regime. So we were very cautious in our recommendations. We wanted to go back to the per capita arguments that we had used successfully in the cultural capital, and that David Silcox had used successfully in Metrohead. So we looked at various other models, and we were all set to be very modest and recommend that we would compare ourselves to a city like either Vancouver or Chicago. We at that time were spending on all the arts together, all cultural spending together at the city, $14 per capita. Vancouver was spending $17 and Chicago $21. So we thought, well, we couldn't possibly ask for more than that. One of the council members on our steering committee, Mike Feldman, said, nonsense. We should be comparing ourselves to the leading Canadian city in terms of cultural spending, Montreal. Montreal at that time was spending $26 per capita. We also looked at New York at $54 and San Francisco at $86 per capita. But we decided that Montreal was, our historic rival, was a good comparator, and that's what we benchmarked ourselves against. In the report, which has 63 recommendations, and they span heritage preservation, our museums, the development of a new museum to tell the full Toronto story with all its diversity, we focused on the investment in the cultural sector, because we know that for every dollar the city spends in culture on itself, in a way, it doesn't get the return that it spends out in the community. So both with the Toronto Arts Council grants and the major cultural organizations, we had a spending goal, a five-year spending goal, even though this was a 10-year plan. And the five-year spending goal for all of them combined was achieved in 2008. And that's the other reason I think plans are important, because without that plan adopted by City Council, every year I've been there at the city, we have to cut our budget. Every single year since I've started. And the one thing that wasn't cut was the grants budget. It was increased every year. One year, not quite at the level we wanted, but they made up for it in the final year last year, this year, 2008, final year of the funding goals. And we were able, inside the bureaucracy, where no one is allowed to ask for extra money. You can't even put it down on the budget sheet. We were allowed to ask for the extra money for the cultural grants because we had a plan that was approved by City Council. So that was very important to us. I think you all know the kinds of strengths Toronto is building on with its economy and the numbers of people employed in the arts. But one of the things that I think was really interesting this past week, Joyce, you among others sent me the link there's an article in the Toronto Star which was based on a Washington Journal that reviews cities and reviews the standing of various cities as global players, basically. Sorry?
I said it was
Bahad who sent it to
me.
Ah, okay. So this journal is looking at what various cities around the world, where they stand, you know, the kinds of things they do. And this was around sort of global impact. Are you a city who's a global player? And they had a top 10 tier of cities who are global players and the rest aren't, according to this journal and their benchmarks. Toronto ranked 10th, so it made it into that list. Where did it rank in culture? Number four, after London, Paris, and New York. And again, last night I was talking to someone at a cultural event, and they were shocked. They said, no, Montreal is much more culturally vibrant than Toronto. Maybe it is, but Toronto, I think, has a richness and a diversity of cultural expression that was clearly caught in this analysis. But my whole argument there is, if we had not ranked fourth in culture, we wouldn't have made it into the top 10 rankings, because on the economy, on business, on a whole lot of other benchmarks, we were way down there. Culture brought us up on the average. And so the investment that Toronto started making, Toronto Metro, back in 1974 with the David Silcox report, and which it's continued to do to this day, that investment has translated into the kind of city that we all live in right now. It would not have been the city without that. I have absolutely no doubt about that. I think that that kind of knowledge is easy to talk about, but for some reason it's still outside of Quebec. It hasn't been grasped by people, but it is grasped by the regime that we're currently under, Mayor David Miller. And that's the other thing in terms of the politics of this. We came out with a culture plan in 2003. Toronto was in the throes of an election campaign the following year or later that fall, there was an election campaign. David Miller was one of the candidates. He adopted the whole culture plan as his platform. And he hasn't made that mistake, didn't make that mistake in the last election, but how people learn on the job. But he remains a very strong supporter of culture and understands the role of culture in the community. What we wanted to do when we wrote the culture plan, and in this, again, this new structure of culture in the tent, in this critical mass in the city that was building on what Metro had done, and I was building on some of the things I learned at the Toronto Arts Council, what we wanted to do was make culture integral to city building, and we say so in the plan. And it was not that at the time. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's recognized across all city divisions that we have that role, but the culture is now seen to be a major player. I mean, our section, culture section, but culture in general in the city is seen to be a major player in the city and in the city government and in the way the city builds itself. We work with planning. I mean, they would never remember to call us back then, except for Jane. But we work with planning on the West Queen West. Our staff were there pushing, and getting out the result that we got. Our staff came up with the no net loss of cultural space policy that was part of that West Queen West debate and resolution testified at the OMB. And we don't really need to tell people anymore at the city that they need to pay attention to this. They call us. So that our aim was to make culture a central piece of the economic and social fabric of Toronto, and if it isn't there, the recognition is there that that's where it needs to be. And certainly Mayor Miller has said that in his last platform. He wanted creativity to be at the center of the city's new economic development agenda. So there was another change, and Joyce, tell me when I need to stop. There was another change recently. In amalgamation, we went into the dreaded Parks and Recreation Department. We were part of that. And then we were taken out, and now we're joined with economic development. And interestingly, because of the size of culture in relation to the economic development piece, we're the elephant now, with all our 160 or whatever it is staff. It's a good model, though I agree that it probably would be best positioned reporting into a chief administrative officer or city manager. I think it would have much more clout then. And sometimes it's a little difficult, even though we use the economic arguments, it's a little difficult to be one with the economic development folks. But it's a way of saying that culture is important. It's not in the social services. I'm sorry, that's not to say that's not important, but it's not just a socially nice thing. It's not a recreational thing. It has been recognized that it is part of the success of Toronto.